the sixth episode of season four of the Ubuntu UK podcast. It's Tuesday, the 10th of May, 2011, and in this episode, we're going to talk about Natty and have another quiz. We'll, of course, go over the latest news events, a bit about Ubuntu, have your feedback, and something extra special. Ooh. I'm Alan, with this, that's with me.
Is that what's extra special?
What?
That you're Alan.
No.
Okay.
They'll find out. Okay. I'm Alan, and with me in Studio B is the usual team. Hello, Laura. How are you?
Hello. I'm fine, thank you.
Good. What have you been up
to? I've been making a scoreboard for our quiz. Yay!
Yes, and we should mention, actually, while you're waving it around, that you can watch us at the moment, although... Yeah, I guess if you're listening, you could watch us.
Yes.
If you're listening live.
Yes.
Now.
If you're listening in 6 months' time, then no,
it's
you
not going to work.
And you can see Laura's lovely artwork.
For a cunningly named Podbuster.
Ah, not infringing anyone's copyright there.
Okay. Excellent. So where can people watch us?
On Ustream. Ustream.tv/channel/UUPC.
And this is a bit of an experiment.
Yeah,
so, you know,
just a bit.
While we've got someone else's internet connection to.
No, that's fair enough.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Fair enough. So that's Laura. Thank you. Tony.
Hello.
What have you been doing?
I had a phone call from my dad last night. Saying,
wow. So, Mark, what have you been doing?
No, wait. He's listening, or he said he would be.
Oh.
He's been trying to tether his Nokia phone to his Ubuntu laptop so that he can use it as a internet
dongle.
Connectivity dongle
type right.
thing. Really. I've only ever used one of the little 3G USB dongles, which is fine and seems to work okay, but he had all sorts of problems. And it was a fascinating conversation because it really showed the lack of polish in some, those sort of areas of the interface. It was throwing up numbers and throwing terms like HDPSA and GSM and things at him, and he doesn't know what those mean. But if anybody out there has got a Nokia working...
Is it Symbian, or
do
you even know what phone it is?
It began with a C.
Okay. A Nokia C phone.
But yes, I think it's probably a couple of years old or less.
Okay.
So if anybody's got experience tethering via a USB cable, that type of Nokia phone to Ubuntu, a fairly recent version of Ubuntu, I should imagine it's 10.10 or 10.04, then let us know. Get in touch. podcast@ubuntu-uk.org.
So less of what you've been doing this week and more a call for help.
Yeah, well, that's what I've been doing is I've been trying to work out what's going wrong without actually being there.
Cool. And we also have Mark here. Hello, Mark.
Hello.
How are you? What have you been doing?
I've been re-imaging my Guru Plug server. I mentioned last week it failed due to hard drive and things breaking.
Oops.
And yes. And I have been installing on it a server thing called OwnCloud, which is like a cloud system that you put on your own hardware rather than having Google or
what, like Eucalyptus or OpenStack or something like that.
I've never used either of those. Basically, allow me to explain what this is. That way, I won't have to understand what those are.
Yeah, you do that.
Basically, it's a KDE community project, which is the goal of it is to basically allow KDE applications to work in the cloud and sync between your machines and all sorts of clever stuff like that.
Oh, file sync.
Oh.
Not just file syncing.
Is like that state sync as well?
Yeah, that sort of thing. That's the sort of long-term goal. At the moment, it's just basically just a web dev server, but it's got a roadmap over the course of a year and a bit so far where they've got various plans. But we're actually going to be interviewing one of the guys from the project in a couple of weeks.
Oh, excellent.
So he knows a lot more about it than I do.
Brilliant.
Yeah, then you'll actually be able to describe it properly.
Yes.
That'll be excellent.
But yeah, you can look it up on owncloud.org or something if you want to know before then.
Owncloud.
Owncloud.
Not Pwn
Cloud.
Not Pwn Cloud.
No. What about you, Alan?
I have been playing with a multi-boot USB stick, so putting multiple ISO images on one USB stick so that rather than what we normally do is copy like a CD onto the USB stick and then you boot off it, I wanted to put lots of options on there. Because it's big enough to hold lots of ISO images. Well, let's say, for example, you go to someone's house and they've got a machine that's 64-bit capable and they choose they want 64-bit and you've only got one stick.
Ah.
Or what if they choose that they want Kubuntu?
Mm.
Then you could put the Kubuntu
the
ISO.
Obvious choice.
Well, yeah, of course. Exactly. I don't have many friends that make that choice, but if I did, I would be prepared.
Yeah.
Excellent.
That's really interesting. So
Does that use a similar technology to the things where you can get like the DVD cover discs from Linux magazines that have multiple distros on
it's
the same
It's actually really, really easy. It's just Grub.
Oh, right, okay. Oh,
Grub can boot to an ISO image, although if you look online, you find lots of Grub maintainers who say, no, it can't, but it worked for me. So I used it and it worked fine.
Well, I think we better get on with it before that vehicle reverses through the house. And
that's my dishwasher, sorry.
Start with the first segment.
Cool. So, what happened last week? There was a new version of Ubuntu came out.
Hooray!
Natty, what's name?
It came out like 2 days after we did the last episode.
I know, they time things so badly. They should think about us when they do that.
On the other hand, it meant that some people could go to the release party.
Yeah.
Which we couldn't have done if we were busy doing an episode.
Yeah, okay. So, has anyone tried it?
Yes.
Yes.
No.
Oh my life. sorry, I wasn't expecting us to be as prepared as that.
Okay. Hang on, the preparation might now end in that we've tried it, but you know.
Well, I'm using it on the laptop I'm holding in my hand.
I think yeah, Mark so gets most points, yeah. And you.
Well, I'm using it.
Alan's got it on a Mac.
When you tried it already.
Yeah, that's true. So, what's new? We've talked a bit about it, but now you've actually played with it. What do you think?
Well, I'm actually properly using Unity now because I had a play with it in Maverick on my netbook and I didn't like it very much, but now I've used it. I'm using Unity 2D.
Okay.
Just what's 2D?
It's the Qt based version which has slightly less flashiness to it.
Yeah, so in this release, what version are we? 1104 April. Yeah, that's right. 1104. There's on the CD you get Unity 3D, which is a compiz like composited desktop type thing with some 3D effects. But some people have machines that don't do 3D very well, like older machines and certain chipsets. So there's a fallback option, which is GNOME, old style GNOME 2 panel. But that's going away in 1110, and that's going to be replaced by Unity 2D. And Unity 2D is like the same user interface as Unity 3D, but doesn't require as much hardware capabilities.
Okay. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's slightly different in places, but it's mostly the same, isn't it?
I was going to say, is the difference just that it lacks some of the bling?
Seems to be pretty much.
Yeah. And it's not as finished as Unity.
No, it's still quite buggy, I have to say. Like things like the panel, because when I first used it, the panel didn't have the auto hide feature at all, which is why I didn't use it, because on a netbook, without the panel auto hiding, there's not enough space on your screen.
So the launcher down the left-hand side. Yeah. Sorry. I'm not trying to correct you.
Yes, launcher. But, a panel's well, the bit at the top, isn't it?
I found out today that it actually might be changing name again.
Oh, brilliant.
No.
Yeah, to Springboard, apparently. Well, that's what I was told by one of the developers, but maybe not. So this thing down the left-hand side, which pops out when you put your mouse over that
side. So originally when Unity 2D was released, that didn't have the auto hide feature. Now it does, but it's buggy. So sometimes it just decides not to. That doesn't mean that, like before, your windows are then smaller. It just means it's overlapping your windows, which is very annoying.
But yeah, especially if you're trying to read something that's underneath it.
Absolutely.
How are you finding the sort of being productive, switching applications, starting applications?
I'm actually not finding it too bad. I mean, compared to how I use the old netbook interface, it's not that different because I mean, before you just had the little tabs in the bar at the top and now they're down the side, and there's a nice keyboard shortcut which I discovered by accident by, you know, mashing the keys with my sausage fingers.
Where smashing the keys,
you hold down the Windows key, or as it is on my EPC, the home key, and it'll it brings up the panel, the launcher, and puts a number on each of your windows, and then you just press that number and it switches
it's
to
like
window
fast
launches.
Dial kind of thing, I guess.
I've heard lots of people say good things about all the keyboard shortcuts, and apparently Unity is very usable if you're a keyboard fanatic.
Yeah, if you like that kind of thing. And
it's also, I mean, everything seems like if you just want to use the mouse, there seems to be good sort of, you know, dragging and dropping and moving your mouse to reveal things and things like that.
Yeah, there's some funky stuff, like you can, like, you know, if you drag the window up to the top of the screen, it maximizes it full screen. If you drag it to the left, it uses up all of the left hand side. If you drag it to the right, all the right hand side. And they've even fixed it so if you've got dual screen and you've got two screens next to each other, if you drag a window towards the middle of the two screens, it will maximize on the left hand side of the right hand one or the right hand side of the left hand screen. It's quite neat how they've like added those kind of features, and they were added really last minute. So Do you think this is something you would recommend to a new convert? This specifically the interface?
I don't know. Because I'm probably about 60% of my time, no, probably more 80% of my time, I'm a KDE user. So that's more what I'm used to. So if I was recommending to a new convert, I'd probably recommend them that because I can support that better.
Right, okay.
How similar or different is Unity now from what was on the netbooks in Maverick release?
Well, you mean the old netbook remix?
I don't know. I don't have a netbook, well, so it's all hearsay.
The thing that you've seen on Tony's netbook?
No.
The kind of big buttons down the left-hand side, big buttons in the middle of the screen thing?
Possibly. Whatever was on netbooks in Maverick.
On Maverick, it was the netbook edition of Maverick was Unity, proper full-blown Unity. So it's not that different to that. But I used the old netbook remix launcher in Maverick. And it's not that dissimilar from using, like, to actually get on and use. But, I mean, feels like there's been a lot more effort put into it than the old netbook launcher.
Well, yeah, because I also had a parent call for help on Twitter. As you do. My mum's got a netbook and she put, we put Maverick on there last year. And she's really just not got on with the interface at all. And she's got Windows 7 on an ordinary laptop, which I've also never used. So I've no idea how similar that is. But she really doesn't like it at all. Partly also because you can't get Picasa to install, which seems a separate issue, but
doesn't help that they've dropped that now.
But I mean, as I remember at the point when Maverick was released, I don't know if they updated it throughout Maverick, but then you still had the problem before they had the auto hide feature on the dock, which on netbooks is a big problem. So that could be part of the reason she doesn't like it.
So have you tried it then, Tony?
Yeah, I upgraded my work laptop last week, a couple of days after the release. And
did the upgrade work?
Yeah, the upgrade
did. You didn't do a reinstall or anything?
No, upgraded in situ. And once all the downloading bit had done, it was fine. The upgrade process was just worked, rebooted, and had all of the shininess. And I don't know whether it's because I've used the Easy Peasy on my netbook, but I didn't find it that jarring a change. I mean, visually, yes, there's a few differences, and the fact that the panel moves in and out is a little disconcerting at first, but really, after an hour or so of using it, I could find my way around and do most of the things I wanted to do. I worked out how to add things to that launcher on the left-hand side.
How did you find that out? Did you Google for it, or did you just figure it out?
I just figured it out.
I had a bit of trouble with that. The thing is, I'd read the usability study, where they talked about the various things people tried to do it, and I thought, well, I'll try all of those and see which one it was.
See how thorough they
lean from learn from everyone else's mistakes.
Yeah, and I found it eventually.
There seems to be a number of people who have complained about Unity in a number of ways. Like, for example, it's too big a change. It's not like anything that anyone else has got. It's too like the Mac. It's too like Windows. It's too buggy.
But it's been there, okay, albeit in a more simple form. In 10.10, people could have tried it. Some people did try it, but you were never really going to get the same amount of feedback until you made it the default for people to experience and submit further bugs on, I guess.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've got an LTS in 12.04, so by then, you know, it should be finished, and you would hope. If you're going to be an LTS release where they're going to support it for 3 years on the desktop, you want it to be finished by then. And if the goal by then is that Unity 3D is finished and the fallback for non-3D users is Unity 2D, and that's finished because that's going to be the default next release, in theory, 12.04 is going to be a fantastic release, and we just have to ride this next year out until then.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of changes hit at once, and that's the disconcerting thing, I think. If we had the introduction of the launcher on the left-hand side, it would be one thing. Had the introduction of the dash for searching for applications, the searchlight equivalent, if you like, that would have been another thing, and the change to the full-screen working.
Indicator applet thing in the corner, people's applets going away, that kind of stuff irritates people.
I've obviously not used applications that particularly make use of that feature myself at the moment, but if any one of those had come along in one release, it would probably have been a lot less to comment on. But because they've all three have hit at once, I can see that it was quite disruptive for people who are very used to working in their current way with the GNOME 2 desktop. But it was going to have to change. Yeah. It was going to have to change anyway, even if they stuck with GNOME 3. Yeah. It was going to have to change.
Yeah, and the flip side is sometimes it's easier just to get it all out there, get people getting used to it. You'll get a lot of whinging, and some people won't take to it, and some people will.
What about the fact that this is a Canonical product, a Canonical developed Unity? So, as I understand it, the history of Unity is that it was developed internally in Canonical for OEMs, and it was kept under a non-disclosure agreement while it was developed, because it was developed for specific OEMs who wanted it on their devices. And apparently a number of manufacturers wanted a user interface like this, and I think Canonical managed to convince them all that they should all use this, you know, new Unity interface. Mm.
So was it available as an interface for Ubuntu from OEMs before?
No, I don't think it ever resulted in any devices shipping.
Right, okay.
And then it was, announced that this would make its way onto the public Ubuntu shipped device.
Yeah.
And so there was some resistance to the fact that this is an Ubuntu project, and it's an Ubuntu, a Canonical project, and it's only going to be in Ubuntu. There's no other distros are using it. So whilst GNOME 3 would have meant a big difference,
yeah,
the fact is that there will be lots of other distros using it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in fact, Ubuntu would be the only one that's using Unity.
But it's open source. There's nothing to stop other people adopting it if it's the better solution.
Yeah. I mean, there's been
the meritocracy idea, isn't it?
And that's what Red Hat and other companies have done. Like, they've provided a lot of the areas.
Things like Compiz was thrown over the wall by Novell.
Yeah.
They first developed that and then lobbed that over the wall, and everyone, it's on basically every single Linux distro. But that was developed internally and thrown over the wall. And I don't know, maybe people think that Canonical should have learnt from that. And the same thing happened with iFolder, I think. That was developed internally and then thrown over the wall.
Yeah.
So, maybe they're thinking that Canonical should do a better job and should actually develop this stuff in the open.
But then Compiz did still end up everywhere because it was a good thing in the end.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if Unity...
And people wanted it.
If Unity is better than GNOME Shell and it's what everyone wants, then so what, really? If it was developed internally, as long as it's good and as long as it's what, it's what people want,
yeah,
then, who cares where it came from? We've got it now.
But is there really going to be such a lot of resistance from people who perhaps resent the way that Canonical worked with Ubuntu, that they will stop accepting it, even if it was by far and away the better solution?
Isn't it a sign of success when people start complaining about you just because you're the more popular one?
Not sure how far that goes though. Well, could well be. And we
get loads of complaints.
Our mailbox is just full of complaints. But there's only so far you can push that. But even then, the people who seem to be leaving, some of them are ardent supporters. Some of them are people who've been advocating the use of Ubuntu. They're the kinds of people who help us get to that next level.
Mm.
Shouldn't we be concerned about the fact that we're losing these people? Or should we just think, well, actually, they're right, it is a bit broken, and maybe they'll come back in 6 months or a year's time?
Well, I like to think that people who find Unity broken for them at the moment will just switch back to the old GNOME 2, because it's there for this release.
Well, a lot of people don't seem to be doing that. They're saying, this is rubbish, I'm leaving to Arch, or I'm going to Fedora, or... Most of them say Mint or Debian.
Yeah, but what's Mint going to do?
Well, I don't think they've actually decided yet.
I don't like GNOME Shell. I'm going back to Ubuntu.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They'll be in school.
And then again, should we care about these people who flip-flop from one distro to another?
Yeah.
Are they actually contributing any worth?
I used to do it. I think it was the first Ubuntu when Compiz was enabled by default, and it broke my machine, and I switched to SUSE for 6 months. And then I switched back because I didn't like it very much.
Welcome back.
Good job you did, really. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here.
I wouldn't be here today. Yeah, but I mean, it's not. I don't think it's too much to worry about right now, because we could find that they just say, "Oh well, I'm on this distro, but it doesn't have all this stuff I liked in Ubuntu." Even though it's got a different interface.
And all my files are locked up in Ubuntu 1 and I can't get at them on SUSE.
Yeah, trust the cloud, my friends. Well, if you've got experiences with Natty, if you've just upgraded following the release, send them in to podcast@ubuntu-uk.org or get in touch via any of the other means, which you can find listed on the website and at the end of the show.
Now it's time for the news. LastPass, the service for securely storing passwords in the cloud, may have been hacked. While the company can't be certain data was stolen, an unexplained traffic spike led them to take the precaution of telling all users to change their master passwords.
Okay, this is an online thing, is it then?
Yeah, it's a web browser plugin thing, and you sign into it, and then every time, you know how your browser remembers passwords?
Yeah.
Well, it remembers the passwords and then syncs them in the cloud. So when you log on another PC, you install the extension there, and magically you get to auto log on to all your websites.
Oh, that's quite cool.
It's actually really, really nice.
It's brilliant.
Apart from when it gets hacked.
It's not necessarily been hacked. They can't confirm that. But also, everything that LastPass stores is encrypted, and they have no means to decrypt it. So the only way that hackers would get anything is if they downloaded all of the stuff and then brute forced it all.
And if you were dumb enough to have a really simple password.
Yeah. You're probably not clever enough to be using LastPass in the first place.
I don't know. Who knows?
The judge of the Oracle versus Google patent case has ordered that the amount of patent infringement claims be reduced to a, quote, triable number, unquote, from 132 just down to 3. Google has also been ordered to reduce its prior art references used to claim Oracle's patents are invalid to 8.
This is good.
Wow.
It means that, yes, it's particularly good if you are not a fan of software patents, because Oracle have been told that they can't later reopen cases related to the 129 patents that's 3 years of university for you. 129 patents that they have had excluded from this case. They're still not allowed to sue Google for them later.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Down the line. So the judge seems to be kind of setting this up as almost as a bit of a test case.
The kernel used in the recently released Natty has been shown to consume 6% more power than the one in last October's Maverick release. On further investigation, though, it gets worse. The Pharonix benchmarks found that there was already a 20% increase in power consumption in the kernel used by Maverick. Canonical's taking the bug seriously, but as it's a kernel problem, it's likely affecting other distros. It's just Canonical getting more publicity, I think. Thanks to listener Ian Pascoe for emailing us about the story.
Yeah, actually, at the release party, I had a chat with one of the Canonical kernel guys, and he said, and he was talking about this and how not even the kernel guys really know where this is at the time when I spoke to him, and he said when you look at other platforms like Android, they're on a version of the kernel which is much lower that isn't affected by this, but basically everybody else is. So you know, basically every Linux distro is going to hit this problem. It's not just us.
Is it just that Ubuntu has made a release using a newer version of the kernel?
Yeah, fairly new, yeah.
Right, okay.
I kind of wonder if I needed to buy a new battery now.
Microsoft have bought everyone's favourite evil VoIP software, Skype, for a whopping $8 billion. What this means for Linux and Mac users of Skype, or even Microsoft's equivalent, Link, time will tell.
Never mind what it means for everybody else. I'm worried what it's going to mean for the Linux Outlaws guys.
Maybe that's why they're offline at the moment.
Maybe this will push them to using Mumble or some other SIP. Maybe this is the motivation people are going to need, although...
Well, I mean, you've got to worry that it'll kill the Linux and Mac version, maybe.
Because the Linux and Mac version are really good and worth keeping going.
Well,
they work. They work. That's the really frustrating thing. You know, it's the only thing that you can, out of the box, you know, turn it on
work.
And, you know... Okay, it's a bit flaky here and there, but it actually, for the large part, works. It's really annoying.
Yeah, well, time will tell, as it says.
And now some events.
Hooray.
And we have some more news about OgCamp, which this week is brought to you by Chris Proctor on behalf of log.org.uk.
Yay!
Who is our first confirmed sponsor.
Yes, not just this news, in fact... You know, the actual event as
The actual event.
Yes. So thank you to Chris for stepping up and sponsoring us on behalf of the log.org.uk people. We got some information. We had a second batch of tickets released for OgCamp, which that's 300 in total that we've made available now. And they've all gone as well.
That's 300.
That's 300. Yeah, so that's 300 in total. And we've got a waiting list facility on the Eventbrite page, and a few people have signed up for that already. If you're still wanting to come, please do sign up on that, because if there's enough interest, then we will go back to the venue and see if we can work something out to have even more people come along.
Yeah, so people have been concerned that we're limiting the number of tickets and you won't be able to turn up and you won't be able to get in. We're more concerned about how much space we're going to have in the venue, and we don't want to have an event where loads of sweaty geeks are crammed in a tiny room. And the place is very flexible, and they do have other rooms, so
we just need to make sure we get the right combination of
absolutely
rooms.
Yeah.
And we're also looking for people who might want to exhibit. If you're running a free or open source software or just something cool, a little project or something, or a group, you'd like to have a table, you get a wallpaper table at the venue, get in touch with us, ogcamp@ubuntu-uk.org, or via the ogcamp.org website, and somebody will get in touch about arranging that.
It'd be really cool if we could have like crafty people or electronics geeks people.
Devious people or...
No.
Creative people.
Yeah, people like, with swag bags. Yeah,
no, people who make things either in a craft way or an electronics way or something. It'd be really cool to have some demos around.
Yeah, something creative. Yeah, that's good.
And the official hotel, well, sorry, not the official hotel, the suggested hotel.
For legal reasons.
This is not an official hotel.
The one we're recommending people check out if they are stuck for ideas is the Premier Inn in Aldershot. It's got good pricing at the moment on rooms. And
It's not too far away.
It's about 3 miles, so a short cab ride or train ride or bus ride. There are hotels in Farnham itself, but they're a bit more pricey. But if you've got the money and you want to be able to stagger from the venue to the pub and back again, then go for one of those.
It's quite a nice, quaint place, and hotels to match.
Yes, lovely.
And that's all we've got for the events. Okay, now this is the first time we've done this season. We've got a competition.
Ooh.
Now, Alan managed to acquire...
Did we practice that in rehearsal?
No.
We didn't. Maybe we should have
not
done.
Not well enough.
We need to have a rehearsal.
Alan managed to acquire some swag from the Ubuntu Natty release party in London, which I think is code for wearing a big coat and stuff.
I was stood there. I had a bag that had my own stuff in it, and other people were shoving T-shirts in
my bag.
Okay, well, that means it's all legitimate and we can afford to give it away on the show. So we've got some T-shirts, a couple of hats, a mouse mat, a narwhal model signed by the Ubuntu release manager, Kate Stewart.
It's a proper narwhal with 4 magical tusks and 3 adorable animals to impale. It's called the Avenging Narwhal playset.
Let's be clear, this isn't a real narwhal.
You look aghast, Laura. It is actually a... And there is a penguin as well. There's a tux penguin.
Excellent,
that you can
spear. That you can also skew.
Yeah, totally.
So the release manager signed that. So we've got all these bits and bobs. And all you need to do to be within a chance of winning them, Alan is now showing them to the camera if you're watching via the Ustream.
We've got a bunch of T-shirts. They're various sizes as well. So we've got extra large, large, and we're just going to ship them all to... whoever we think.
So we're looking for one winner for this, and you can then distribute these among your friends and family as you see fit. Okay, so all you need to do to be within a chance of winning is tell us how to pronounce the name of the next release of Ubuntu, which is 11.10. 11.11, even.
No, it's 11.10.
It's 10.11.
No, it's 11.10.
Yes, it would be 11.10.
Okay, all right, whatever. But we want it in an audio format.
It's good
that
we don't edit this anymore.
It is, isn't it? Because that would make us look good. We want it in an audio format, so send us a WAV, OGG, MP3, or bonus points if you can find a really obscure file format which none of us can open, of you saying, hello, my name is, insert your name, and I pronounce Ocelot as, and then say how you would say it.
Cool.
So, yeah. Hello, my name is whatever, and I pronounce it as blah, 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 blah. That's it. We'll listen to them and play some of them on the next show, and whichever we deem the best by some unspecified measure that we'll make up as we go along, we'll win all of the prizes. So get your entries in to us before Sunday, the 22nd of May, and you can submit them via voicemail. The numbers are on our website, or send us in a little clip to podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. And, well, best of luck to you. Is that it?
Yep.
Okay. Okay, Laura, over to you.
And now it's the podcast... Podbusters quiz. Yes, so you might recognise the format from the 80s game show Blockbuster. And if you're on the Ustream live stream at the moment, you should be able to see our fantastic scoreboard.
It's here.
Here,
he says, indicating.
As modelled by Tony on the Ustream. Okay.
Okay.
So, we've, as it's supposed to happen, we're going to have an uneven team, so it's 2 versus 1.
Excellent.
Any way you cut this, it's going to be pretty uneven.
As Tony's winning at the moment overall the series, he's on his own.
Oh, thanks.
Excellent. Which means that you... Hold on. I'm going to have to get up.
Oh, okay. Hang on.
Oh,
look at this.
Oh, wow.
Oh, here we go.
Are you going to sing us a song?
Yes, which means that Tony is white, going top to bottom.
Okay.
And Alan and Mark are blue, going left to right.
I've just realised something.
Or right to left.
You can't see the scoreboard.
You can't see the foot.
The listeners at home can.
You can see it on
the
screen.
Sorry, Laura will turn it around.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
That's good.
So this is going to be interesting.
So it's me versus these two?
Yes.
Okay.
So,
can I just to... make sure I get this right. Tony only has to get 4 to win, whereas we have to get 5.
Yes.
That's why it's fair.
Well, potentially. Yes.
Potentially, depending on how well we
block.
Do.
According to Wikipedia, that was always controversial, even in the 80s. So.
Wow.
Time for cake.
Okay.
Right.
So, Tony, as you're on your own, we'll go...
imbibe those carbs.
First.
Okay.
So, I've got the quotes here. Let's play Podbusters.
Okay, let's play Podbusters.
Tony, you're going to have a look at the letters.
Right, okay.
Tell you what, I'll lift it.
Okay.
Pick a letter.
Can I have a P, please, Laura?
There it is.
It had to happen. Okay, so P.
Didn't have to happen.
What P was the project to fix annoying little problems in Ubuntu?
Paper cuts.
Your sound effect thing working?
Yes.
Yay!
I can't hear any of this because I haven't got earphones on.
Right, okay.
Right.
It just went ping.
Excellent.
Is that a good ping or is that a bad ping?
That's a good one.
That was a good ping.
So I got that right.
So Tony gets a little white patch over the P.
All right. Shall I choose a letter?
Just as well.
Yes, you two pick a letter.
Right. Should we have one of the ones along the top line?
We have to have one of the ones on the blues attached to, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
So F.
I don't know. Do you have to?
I think so. I think we have to connect the blues, don't we?
Yeah, yeah, but you do it from any order.
But I don't know where you have to start there.
F.
Yeah.
Okay. What F was the developer event at which we recorded the first UPC episodes interviews?
Ooh.
Are we allowed to confer on this?
Yes.
Was it by any chance the Free and Open Source Developers European Meeting, otherwise known as FOSDEM?
Yay! Well done.
Okay, so you get your first patch too.
Many happy memories of that weekend.
Yes. So, Tony.
Hello.
Oh, hold on. This is a very physical game for me.
Yes. Bob Holness never did this amount of work, did he? I'll go with G, please. G.
G.
For golf.
G. Okay. What G is the revision control system created by Linus Torvalds?
Even though this is a family-friendly show, I will say Git.
How dare you?
Yeah, I win. The only time I can get away with that on the show.
Yes.
It's going well.
Okay.
I can't believe you made that.
Blues.
You go. You choose.
I will have R, please. Oh, don't you...
Okay, let me scroll down to R. Okay, what R wrote the Cathedral and the Bizarre article?
Oh, so easy. It's a book. It's a very long article.
Missive.
On your mic.
Raymond.
Chandler?
Oh, God. What's his last name? Raymond. IRC.
He's the guy with the gun.
He was the gun bloke. That's the only thing I remember him for. And Ray. Oh, he's gone.
Ray Winston.
Oh,
I should do.
I don't have a count.
I don't know why it's gone out of my head.
Well, have the best guess you can.
Raymond.
Eric S. Raymond.
Oh! I thought that was his first name for some reason. I was thinking, Raymond, what's his last name?
Okay.
I was really hoping you would.
So, Tony.
Yes, okay. Hello. Can I go... can I go for V, please, Laura? V.
Don't like the way this is looking.
No, well, no. Neither. Tony's
if he gets it wrong, you do get to have a go up.
Ah, I see.
So it's V. What V is the text editor shipped with Ubuntu?
Ooh. It's got to be Vim. Yay!
Bah. Oh,
I even had in brackets, not Vi.
I think you find that's V-I.
Oh, well, here we go. You're not going to win any points for that.
This is where you're not going to make...
Not going to lose any. Have a C, I suppose.
Yeah.
Okay. Back up to the top.
It's a good question so far.
For you?
Yeah. Well, nobody's got any wrong. What C do you go to find Perl modules?
Ooh. CPAN.
I keep forgetting to play the toilet. Okay. Well,
for the benefit of people going? On Ustream, that went bing.
Oh, yeah, you wouldn't be able to hear that, would you?
And for the benefit of the people who are not watching this live and can't see the scoreboard, we are now effectively three each, and it's going to come down to this next question, really. Whoever gets it right first. Well, if I get it right, I've won. If I get it wrong, then the guys have got one more question to get.
And you've got three more questions to get.
Yeah, exactly. So it's going to come down to this question. Okay, let's go for I then, please, Laura. This works well on radio.
Yes. What I is the vector graphics editing package available in the Ubuntu repositories?
Inkscape.
Bah.
Bing.
These are too easy.
Yeah. Who wrote these questions?
I did. Oh, what a giveaway.
You see, I'm too young to remember the music.
Yeah. So I think that means I've won.
Yes.
Excellent.
Well done. Congratulations. Oh,
yeah. Thank you very much. Well, yes. You can guarantee we're going to see this board again after the amount of effort.
We're going to see it again in a fire.
Got into preparing it. I'm sure we'll see it again before the season is out. Maybe we should do it at Odd Camp.
We would need the 3D laser display for that, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, obviously, because that's down at your house. Studio B.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. You can get it in the back of the car.
And that's Podbusters.
Cool. Okay.
Thanks very much, Laura.
Thank you, Laura. I don't know what we're going to do for the next episode, whether we're going to have another quiz or whether we're going to do a break.
We can give it a break for a bit.
Yeah.
Do some interviews and stuff.
Yeah. Talk about Ubuntu, you mean. Rather than just entertain ourselves.
Yes.
Okay, well, thank you very much indeed for sorting that out, and we better get on with the show.
Yeah.
Now it's time for a bit about Ubuntu.
Gerald. I had to say that because Alan had his mouth full of water.
Do you know what? I heard from Ian Lane, who's at UDS.
Yeah.
And someone giving one of the plenary talks today said Ecosphere. One of the Linaro guys said Ecosphere on stage in front of like 300 people.
Did anyone yell out Gerald?
No, I think Laney had a little chuckle to himself.
Next time you've got to shout it out. It can be like our Stephen, as if we're Adam and Joe. The whole thing can be, if anybody mentions Ecosphere, somebody else can shout out, Gerald!
Maybe. Yeah. Very small community of people you who get that joke, yes.
Yeah, well, you know, nothing wrong with a small community. Okay, what's in the bit about Ubuntu this time?
So, Practical E-commerce has reviewed Natty, calling it user-friendly and highlighting benefits including cost-saving, security and development functionality.
So this is practicalecommerce.com. Mm.
Really?
They're not they're an e-commerce site.
Oh, okay.
So they're not particularly an open source site or even a software development site or anything like that. They're quite geeky about e-commerce, as you might expect. But they've obviously reviewed Natty and comparing it with Windows 7 and saying if you want to save a lot of cash, you can use Natty. But it's quite nice to have kind of an outside perspective on it.
Yeah, totally.
They've done a great article with great big arrows that point to the various bits with their name, like the dash, the launcher, very big white arrows plastered across the screenshots. And it's really interesting in the fact that they found it so relatively easy to get on with, kind of contrast with some of the negative comments we've had.
Well, yeah. That's true. Most of the negative stuff has come from people who already know Ubuntu, not from in inverted commas, outsiders. And if we're getting outsiders saying, actually, that's quite good, then we must be doing something right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if they don't know the history, they don't know the fact that GNOME 2 used to be looked like this or whatever, then it doesn't actually matter that it's changed to them. It's just something new to pick up and get on with.
Matt Zimmerman is stepping down as CTO of Canonical. He's planning to retain his community position on the technical board, however.
It's a bit of a surprise, this.
Yeah, it was a bit, yeah.
It's not the first Canonical name thing go in the recent couple of years.
Yeah.
By any stretch. We have Matt Assay come and go.
Yeah, Matt Assay went. And in fact, at UDS, during Mark's keynote, he made a little gag about the way that people think the technical board is too Canonical heavy and there aren't enough community people on it. But now that Scott and Matt have left, it's suddenly more community. It wasn't orchestrated like that, of course.
No, of course not. So Scott James Remnant is a good point. Matt's on his way. And the head of the Ubuntu One team left to go to a cloud startup as well.
Oh, yes, he did, yeah.
So is it a little bit worrying that we're seeing all these people going? Matt's been key to Canonical since it started, and key to Ubuntu since it started.
Doesn't it just reflect that it's no longer a startup? I mean,
possibly.
I think you get that quite a lot once the company settles down. And it's not maintenance mode as such, but it's more a day-to-day business. Yeah. It's less of the excitement and buzz.
I don't know what the average staff turnover rate in companies of that size in our sector is, but
yeah, it's true.
Either way, it's good news if you want a job at Canonical.
If you need a CTO, you know.
Has he got a nice office?
Well, it's
is it Milbank?
It's Milbank, yeah. So yeah,
nice view,
lovely view. Yeah,
yeah, definitely worth it.
Chris Wilson posted to the Ubuntu UK mailing list asking for users to help out with an MSC project looking at using Ubuntu One to develop a continuous client system.
What is a continuous client?
That's like where you have something on one of your devices. So say you've got a set of tabs open on your netbook and you and you sit down at your desktop and you want to transfer everything you've got over.
Like in 24 when Jack Bauer says, send me
exactly
send that to
like
my
that.
Screen.
That's exactly what a continuous client
like
is.
Like Xmove.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, and you could pick up your phone and you could walk away from your desktop and all of your, like, mobile, whatever applications you've got, their mobile equivalents would have all the same stuff on.
I'm pretty sure a friend of mine has that already on Solaris. I'm pretty sure he said that you get a smart card, you put it in your Solaris workstation and you have your session and you pull your card out and you could go to any other machine in the building, put your smart card in and your session carries on.
Because they're thin clients, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds like the sort of thing that VNC was originally designed to do.
Oh, is it? Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it runs your desktop on a central server. But the idea of this is not that it's viewing a session on a remote server. The applications will still be running locally on your tablet, laptop, netbook, PC, whatever. But the state is transferred seamlessly between these machines.
Wow.
It's a little bit like what you were talking about before.
Yeah.
With the KDE kind of storing the application state in the cloud or whatever. Mm.
Sounds cool.
Yeah, sounds very cool.
Yeah, we'll put a link in the show notes, so if people want to get in contact with Chris and help him out with his MSC, that would be useful.
Yeah, he's starting off, he says, with a few key applications, because not going to support like all of Software Center.
Yeah, something like PityV would be an interesting one too.
Ooh, yeah. The Ubuntu Forum users can now become members of Ubuntu through their forum activity.
Yeah, this is quite interesting.
It's very good news, I think.
So when we have this concept of membership in Ubuntu, and people can get a reward for their contribution to Ubuntu, and their reward is things like a Linux Weekly News subscription, some free web space, an Ubuntu email address, a cloak on IRC, and a few other neat things. And it also counts towards your sponsorship application for UDS, apparently.
Yes.
So, you know, these are kind of rewards for members, but some people, it's very hard for the people on the membership boards to figure out what their contribution is. So if you see in Launchpad someone's committed a whole bunch of code or has done a huge amount of translation or has triaged a bazillion bugs, it's very easy to see where their contribution is. But actually it's quite hard to see someone's contribution in the forums without rummaging through a million threads and seeing what they've done. So what we did was say to the forums people, you can control that and you know these people best, and you can determine whether their work has contributed to the Ubuntu.
So does it need a recommendation of somebody from the forums to go forward to a
membership? No, you apply in the same way as you apply for membership any other way. You just apply for membership through the forums rather than applying to the regional membership boards. And we've also got the same thing for IRC. So people who contribute a lot on IRC can apply through the IRC council and get their Ubuntu membership that way, because they might sit in an IRC channel all day answering tech support questions, and nobody ever sees that unless they read the logs of the Hash Ubuntu channel. So it's pretty cool.
That's a very good idea. It's nice to keep people included.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in the not about Ubuntu, Laura, what have you got for us this time?
LSB, which I did know what it stood for.
Linux Standard Base.
Standard Base. Working group starts discussions about the file system hierarchy standard 3.0. Thanks to Roger Light for emailing us about this.
What's new in the new 3.0 FHS?
Though a bit of it anyway was something to do with having a slash run instead of having slash var slash run and slash var slash something else.
Lock.
Because during startup, you often need slash var slash run before slash var gets mounted.
Right.
Apparently, I've never had that problem.
Apparently, some of it's coming to the Fedora, which they're discussing there. Yes. And so they thought, good time to make it a standard.
Yeah, and it hasn't been revised since 2004, as you say, so it needs a bit of a brush up probably these days. But yeah, so thanks to Roger Light for that. And we we must try and keep him more occupied in future. It's time for your feedback, and we've had a metric bag load of it. The first one comes from Ian Pascoe, who emailed us at podcast@ubuntu-uk.org about the Pharonix benchmark findings about the Linux kernel's increasing power consumption that we talked about before.
I wonder if everyone is missing a trick by not having the data centrally stored. The problem may have been highlighted back to the kernel team at an earlier date if the data collected was mashed up into one place. Maybe Victor Palau, who we interviewed last episode, and project leaders from other distros could create a common set of tests that could then be fed to a central site like the Pharonix Test Suite data engine, together with the tests that Pharonix engine directly. They could then highlight whether a problem is specific to a small set of sub-users or the entire Linux ecosphere. Gerald, which can only be a good thing.
Yeah, the idea of getting this data in different places was one of the keys behind Launchpad anyway, I thought. It was things that could be fed up to the upstream.
Well, yeah, we try and encourage people to forward bugs upstream.
But it's manual, isn't it?
It's semi-automatic. It depends on the bug. If we're forwarding to Debian, when I filed a bug and I create a little patch, there's a script you run called submit to Debian, and it goes whoop and sends it up to Debian as an upstream bug. But I don't think we have the same kind of thing with the kernel. You're right, it's a bit of manual effort.
Well, a bit of manual effort is not necessarily a bad thing, but it could have helped catch this thing out before it got into a stable kernel, I guess.
Yeah.
Chris asked on our website about our command line love.
What does the find pipe CPIO command do that rsync minus av uppercase hax doesn't do?
Good question. I had a bit of a think about this. And the only thing I could think of that it might do differently is rsync, because it only syncs things that have changed, I believe it stores some sort of history of what it does as it goes along. No,
it doesn't. When you start it up, it does the analysis at each end.
Yeah.
And it can cause quite a lot of load on the other end if there's like a bazillion little files.
Okay.
Yeah,
so there is an overhead to running
rsync. Yeah. I knew it did something else.
Yeah.
And that's your answer, isn't it? If you're running on a system where you don't want to put a lot of load
that was what I was going to say. Yeah.
Got you out of that one. Somebody else, Jules in the IRC channel, also suggested the same.
Yeah, we've had a couple of people ping us and go, why would you use that? Well, there you go.
There you go.
Mike Hingley emailed us with a challenge for the UUPC community.
I completed the Open University T155 entry-level course, Introduction to Linux. For some reason, I scored 45% for task 5, and try as I might, I've not been able to determine why I scored so low for this task. So I've decided to reach out to the Linux community in an effort to see where I went wrong.
And get them to do your answers for you?
He's already done the test. This is his test results.
Okay. And he posted a load of screenshots of...
Yeah, and exactly what he did and exactly what the question asked him to do.
Right.
Part of the way they mark it, it seems, is that he has to take screenshots as he goes along, and then the examiner can see what he did as well as what the outcome was.
Okay.
So he's got those screenshots and he's posted them.
So yeah, we'll put a link in the show notes if you want to.
You haven't solved that for him then, Mark?
I had a look and everything he did makes sense to me.
Yeah, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I'm sure he can solve it using find pipe CPIO.
I'm not going to live that one down, am I?
Yeah. And finally, we've got another message from the mad loony that is the Wing Commander.
Wing Commander, Sir Arthur Curmudgeon here again. I'm slowly getting the hang of this open source thing, but I am a little confused. What? Well, where am I? Oh, yes. Confused. Confused about all these Linux names. Yes, my nephew was trying to explain this thing called Ubuntu. Sadly, he didn't explain Ubuntu 1 and why it had to be replaced. So I've still only got half the story. Now I find out there's Mint and Crunch Bang. It sounds a bit like the last time I landed a de Havilland Comet. Lovely aeroplane. Very shiny. Or at least it was when I got in it. Apparently, all these Linux things come from something produced by Debbie Ann. Sounds like a lovely girl. I wonder, do you have her phone number? Anyway, I'm afraid I might be sending this in a bit too late, as I just heard the chap you had on from the Ubuntu certification scheme. I did think you were all certifiable myself, but I'm sorry to hear that you've been certified in the middle of your run of programs. I say, carry on regardless. Don't let the get you, and when they turn up with the straitjackets, run as fast as you can. I know I did. Well, that's all for now. Yours, the WC.
I do hope we're going to get a contribution for the competition from the Wing Commander.
I hope he's going to do a talk at Og Camp.
Yeah.
That would be good.
Yes. He's got his own little following now. Yeah. He's got his own little cult following.
We do actually get people asking us.
The Ubuntu UK podcast featuring the Wing Commander.
Yeah. Yeah, star billing. Yeah, lots of people in the IRC channel, #Ubuntu-UK-podcast on Freenode, asking about the Wing Commander and whether he's going to put in an appearance. But that is the end of your feedback.
Was it a good idea to do this video thing?
I've been getting screenshots as we go.
Brilliant.
Oh, oh, good.
Great.
Well, if you think you know what all of our hand signals mean.
specifically the ones from Tony pointing at
you. Yeah. Yeah, there's a special prize for anybody who knows what that one means. But yes, if you tuned in on the Ustream channel and if you've had a good experience or a bad experience, let us know. Send us an email in and we'll see if we can maybe try and do it again next time we don't do it at our house.
Studio A.
We do have 22 viewers now. At the peak, like,
it was 23.
A couple of minutes before we started, it was about 31.
Oh, and then
we
was.
Started
then
and
we
all went
started
tumbling
and
down.
It all dropped.
Yeah, maybe this is a bad idea.
This isn't the webcam show I was looking for.
Oh dear, that's all for this episode. Thank you for listening and maybe watching. You can find out how to get in touch with us on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org, including voicemail numbers and Twitter feeds, Facebook and IRC channels. Let us know what you think of the show or give us your thoughts about Ubuntu and the community around it. Join us on Tuesday, the 24th of May for our next live episode and make sure you get the competition entries in the Sunday before that.
Yes, the 22nd. Well, thank you for listening. We seem to have finished a little bit early, which is no bad thing, because I've had a cake sat here looking at me for the last hour, and I'm now going to go away and eat it. I hope you've enjoyed joining us live. If not, downloading it from the website. Join us next time. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye. Bye.